Okay, we're going to call the committee to order. This is the Wednesday, February 13th, 2013 committee meeting of the Transportation and Public Safety Finance Division. Couple of quick announcements. We're on TV today, so smile nicely and do that little secret signal so your mom knows you're thinking of her. Just wanted to let folks know what's happening today. We have what we're calling Show and Tell Day. Probably not the last one that we're going to have. We have eight bills, and really what we have are eight presentations on the agenda of projects from around the state, transportation initiatives, transportation facilities. A day that highlights what's going on around our state in terms of various communities and their efforts to organize around their aspirations and their efforts to create greater economic opportunity, greater mobility, greater livability in the communities which they live and reside. And we're going to hear from a number of community leaders, the leadership that they're taking on behalf of their community. And that's a benefit to their immediate area, of course, and a benefit to the entire state. Each of these come to us in the form of a bill. We've had our discussions, of course, about earmarking and transportation bills in the state of Minnesota. But nevertheless, it's important for us to have these conversations so that we have that dialogue with the Department of Transportation, Metropolitan Council, the legislature, the governor, and, in some cases we can figure out how to proceed on a number of these initiatives. We certainly need to figure out how we're going to pay for the larger need that we have around transportation in Minnesota. We're not going to move any of these bills out of committee today. We're going to lay them all on the table for possible inclusion in the larger omnibus transportation bill that our committee will be developing over the coming weeks. So with that, we will just take everyone should have a copy of the agenda. There are copies up on the file rack here if you don't have one. And I'll just mention to those who have iPads or those who are watching at home, all of the handouts can be viewed online at scribd.com, scribd.com/transpo public safety. So we'll start with the first presentation. Senator Bonhoff is carrying Senate File 239, I-494. Welcome to the committee, Senator Bonhoff, and you can invite your presenters up to the table as well. Welcome, Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's good to be back at transportation. I was on the committee for 4 years, and I've missed being part of transportation.
We're glad to have you back.
Thank you. So I would like to start by giving members just a little bit of a review. I came to the legislature in 2005, and one of the first things, and it was a special session, so one of the first things I did was attend a ribbon cutting on Highway 94, just a little bit to the south of the 394. And I was at that ribbon cutting because Governor Pawlenty was celebrating the fact that they had completed the expansion from right to the south of the 494-169 interchange all the way up to 394. And that was a proud day. There were mayors, county commissioners, people from all along the corridor celebrating. Unfortunately, what wasn't really talked about at that ribbon cutting is that the project ran out of money, and so it literally stopped at 394, and that a stretch of highway that was moving towards the busiest section in growth of our western metro area, and that was Plymouth, which was the next year counted as, the best place to live and best city in the country to live in. So that one fact has really become a quality of life issue for our community. I am not kidding when I say that anyone who lives in that section north of 394-494 has to plan their entire day around finding a way to either live with sitting in traffic for like an hour on a stretch or take an alternative route. And so year after year, since I've been here, we have put forward proposals to deal with this. And so today is not you know, the first time. But I will also say that that second year that I was here, and Governor Pawlenty, if some of you recall, proposed doing this wide sweeping plan of using bonding dollars to just front load some major infrastructure projects. And it was a huge investment, and everybody said, that's too much. I see nodding of Ms. Berezovsky might remember that. But not that it's too much, but remember. But in that proposal, there was the proposal to expand 494. And when that didn't go through, we've really not had a sincere proposal to deal with this problem since. Currently, MnDOT is being somewhat responsive to this serious issue and has proposed to do a dynamic shoulder fix, of which we think we are, in fact, perhaps not, I won't go so far as to say wasting our dollars, but perhaps not thinking long-term strategically to do a very short-term fix. And I won't talk too much more about that now. I'll come back to that. But we are here today to advocate for doing the right thing for the long-term strategic vision of making sure that we can accommodate and fulfill the economic potential of our region. So I have invited two people to testify in support of this bill, which truly this bill, what it does is allows for the bonding of a significant amount of money, $50 million of bonds, to be able to adequately finish the expansion through this congested stretch of highway. So I'm joined by Mayor Kelly Slavik, and I'm joined by Council Member Judy Johnson, also of the Plymouth City Council, but Twin West Affairs Director as well. So, Mayor.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to be here to address this very important issue in our community. As Senator Bonoff stated, it is an unfinished segment. So if you're currently traveling on 494, as soon as you get to Plymouth, it narrows to two lanes from three lanes, and there's congestion. And it's not just during rush hour. It's if there's any kind of snow or rain or accident, it really has a negative impact on our community. Our businesses are suffering, not just with the inability to get goods and services in and out of Plymouth, but also getting their employees to and from Plymouth. And I'll let Judy Johnson speak about that a little more in depth. But we're suffering the effects of this congestion, and people are choosing to either not use 494 and get off on our local streets, or to perhaps not locate their business in Plymouth or not live in Plymouth because we have this issue that really is just affecting our community. On either side of us, there are three lanes. We're restricted to the two lanes. And the proposal that MnDOT has presented, I'm extremely grateful for. Is it a good solution? It's okay. It's not a great solution. It's not the permanent solution. They're telling us it's a temporary fix. It's a temporary fix that's supposed to last 15 years. And I know there's a MnPass study underway for the entire 494 corridor, but we can't wait. We can't wait for that to get done. We're just asking to have three lanes through our community like every other city around us does. When the traffic gets off of 494, I can tell you, first of all, I'm extremely grateful that this was moved up to 3 o'clock so I don't have to suffer that congestion trying to get back to Plymouth to get my kids from their activities. And I saw ashes on someone's forehead. I forgot it was Ash Wednesday, so I have to get to church too. But just when that congestion hits, people are getting off and they're using our local streets. And our streets weren't designed as an alleviator for a highway. So we are seeing our roads deteriorate quicker, and we're having to use our city tax dollars to upgrade and fix these roads. We're seeing public safety issues. Because the roads aren't designed for that level of traffic, we're seeing many more accidents. And it's just a burden on our city and on our police department to try to respond to this. So we're just asking to do this project right. MnDOT's proposal of a dynamic shoulder, again, it's not the solution we're looking for. I'm more than happy to take it if that's all that we can get, but I really want to pursue the option of getting that general purpose third lane so that the corridor, the 494 corridor, is consistent. The dynamic shoulder would only be able to be used, you know, during times of congestion. There's sensors along the system that will open it up with a red, it'll have a red X, and if it can be opened up, there'll be a green arrow overhead. We've had some questions, too, about how are we going to enforce that. That dynamic shoulder will have a loss of a shoulder then during peak congestion time, which is when you really need the shoulder on the highway. So we'll lose that shoulder. So if there is an accident, where is somebody going to pull over? Where are they going to go? And if, you know, it's really a safety issue for us, too, we're struggling with. And if we're trying to enforce that through our public safety department, where are we going to, how are we going to pull somebody over if they're using the shoulder when they shouldn't be and it's not there to use in the first place? So we're really struggling and looking for a permanent solution. We want to make sure that we recognize that these funds are limited and there's a lot of competition for them. We feel like we've kind of waited and we're next in line and we're hopeful that it's our turn coming up. But we, because these dollars are so scarce and they're very precious, we want to do this right the first time and not just have maybe a 15-year fix until MinPass comes along or until another solution is created. We want to make sure this is a permanent fix like the rest of the corridor enjoys. And when you look at transit opportunities, too, we see a lot of transit projects going on around us, the Bottineau project, the Southwest Light Rail. None of that comes to Plymouth. So we really have to rely on our freeway system. That's all we have. We would love to see some of these additional transit projects come to our city. In the Met Council's plan and out the next 30 years, they're not there. So we need something. We need some system to move our residents and to move our employees and to move goods and services in and out of Plymouth.
Thank you, Mayor Slavik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I'm Judy Johnson, Director of Government Affairs at the Twin West Chamber of Commerce, one of the largest chambers of commerce in the state of Minnesota, representing 10 suburban communities in the West Metro and beyond. We serve over 700 members, and I've heard a lot from the business community on how important it is to have a strong multimodal transportation system, not only in our region, but our state. One of the top projects that we do have listed at our Chamber of Commerce is getting a third full lane on 494. That's been a top priority of our Chamber of Commerce for several years. And again, one of the reasons it's important to commerce, and not commerce just within the city of Plymouth or just within our West Suburban region, really within the state and beyond, because it's a major corridor for commerce throughout Minnesota and throughout the interstate connection in total. And one of the problems that we're having is we speak with businesses on a daily basis who have to reroute their service vehicles, their shipments, everything that they've got as far as their workers around the congested periods, which are not just a couple hours a day in the morning and afternoon, but really almost becoming connected, and especially if there's a weather event. So as Mayor Slavik indicated, those trips are now being pushed off onto local streets, including county streets, and also to the east on Highway 169, which has no plans for any reconstruction or major upgrades other than some temporary fixes for over 30 years. And until we get a solution on 494, those kinds of pressures are going to continue to push property taxes up that are going to have to address the additional costs that are falling at the local level for traffic that's really not intended for those roads. Again, it's not just a Plymouth problem because we've got so many cars going through this corridor a day. Right now, 100,000 trips per day are traveling through this corridor. And I believe MnDOT projects that within the next 10 years, an additional 30,000 car trips or truck trips a day will be going through this corridor. It is something that I'll put my city council hat on and my former mayor's hat on, and also say this has been something that the city of Plymouth has been addressing for 15 years. When I first took office in 2002 as mayor, we realized it was a huge safety issue in our community. And I want to thank Senator Bonoff for introducing legislation back in the day that got cable median barriers placed within that corridor. We had too many. One death is too many, but we had way too many deaths taking place in the corridor for head-on crossover traffic collisions. And safety has improved. But as Mayor Slavik said, for the business community, too, we're concerned about future safety. The temporary solution does not give a concrete median barrier. And we are concerned, too, about losing that shoulder lane. That's very important for the business community as well. And we need that there for safety. If any of you have ever tried to stop on an interstate, even during non-congestion periods, it's very dangerous to get out of your vehicle and to try to do anything to get help. So the business community, again, is really pushing and thanking Senator Bonoff for Senate File 239, another attempt to try to put funding forward on 494. And again, our chamber thanks you for your great support of transportation work in the metro region, and we'll stand for any questions if you have any. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mayor Johnson. Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, I do know that we don't, you know, legislate with bills which stretch of highway is going to be funded, because it would be a free-for-all if we all did that. And so so I do understand that. But I think that there is a question that is valid for the committee to consider, and I don't expect you to consider it in this forum, but that is spending $34 million to do something that is temporary, this dynamic shoulder, versus spending the additional $15 million to do something that would last perhaps a century. So I think that's a valid question to ask. And, you know, there has been some talk about, well, the congestion is only for certain periods. But I would ask you, if you look in your handout that I gave you on page 10, and this handout says, your destination, our priority, Metropolitan Freeway System 2012 Congestion Report. On page 10, it shows a map. And it has the section of highway that we're talking about colored in the darkest color, which means it's greater than 3 hours of congestion a day. And that's the worst type of congestion. And so for us to think that it's smart when we know that we're going to have increased growth in this area, especially when you look at just a little farther down the corridor, the expansion of United Health Group in this area, for us to think that it's okay to spend $34 million to do something that isn't ultimately going to fulfill the need when we could spend slightly more and perhaps do something that makes strategic sense. So I know you have a lot of projects to consider, and I greatly appreciate the committee taking the time to listen to our requests and those of my colleagues.
So, Senator Bonhoeff, could you just orient us a little bit on the map for those who don't know where...
Talking about, if you look at the intersection of 394 and 494, first what I would start by pointing to is 494 and 212, where that comes together on page 10, and you look at
which
the
page. There are two maps in here. Which page are you looking at?
10.
Page 10. If you look at the intersection of 494 and 212 and the section of 494 all the way up to 394 and then slightly crossing it where the shading is very light,
That expansion worked. It solved the problem. People are so happy.
I look at my driving pattern, and I specifically try and get to that section of highway because you can move. But the minute, and this is a
great map,
it's accurate, the minute you cross little bit past 394 to the north, a complete standstill at about 3 o'clock. So I don't think you're going to get much help there, Mayor.
It's better than five.
Right. And then and that goes on past Highway 55.
And Senator Bonhoeff, where is the United Health campus expansion?
So the United Health campus is expanding in three different places, but one of them is actually off 494
and Grand Road.
Area and 169, so it's sort of sandwiched in the middle. They're actually having two campuses right in that area, and they're going to be adding 10,000 jobs.
Right.
So
there will be good
to the north,
transit service, but there will be a lot of cars going there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And many of those folks do come from Maple Grove and come down that corridor and beyond. That's a common commute, is that cross commute.
Great. Thanks. Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and in full disclosure, I work for United Health Group, so I'm very familiar with all of those buildings that are currently going up because I may actually have to occupy one of them at one point in time. Just some questions to the author, and actually I know the answers to these because I have driven that section of road for 15 years. Approximately in 2000, and I think it was 2006 and 2007, you alluded to it. That was two lanes. That the section of 494 south of 394 down to 212 was two lanes.
Yep.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but once that opened, and this is to sort of emphasize the point, there was no congestion in that area, particularly in the southbound regions when there was plenty of feed to move into the next section of 494, correct?
Mr. Chair and Senator Osmick, yes, that's what I was showing, and it's demonstrated in the map, too. And I recall when it opened, it was like, oh, my gosh, this bottleneck just opened up, and people were free to move in the corridor.
Correct. And, Mr. Chair, the northbound section, one thing that I would draw attention to is that we have, on a daily basis, the congestion backs up from 394 almost all the way down to 212, down to Crosstown, creates accidents, creates injuries. It also creates, on 394, trying to exit 394 to northbound 494 is a habitual accident-prone location causing injury and multiple multiple accidents on a pretty regular basis because 494 northbound can't handle it. And, you know, one of the good parts of adding that lane on 494 south of 394 was increasing the speed. Unfortunately, it increased the speed to the bottleneck where it stopped. So I'm very happy that this bill is here. I only wish I could be an author on it.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Osmek, I think I have an extra spot. I'll see.
You can add me immediately. Thank you.
And, Mr. Chair, I know Senator Russ uses this corridor, so...
Senator Bonoff, you have five authors.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
I checked.
I just want to bounce someone off.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rist.
I would yield to a first-termer and take my name off so that his could go on.
All right.
Okay, we'll do that.
All right. Little deal cutting here at the table.
Thank you.
It's going to cost you.
Only I know what that costs.
Excellent.
And Mr. Chairman, finally, in summary, I remember when we heard the overall statewide transportation plan, and there was to be a certain amount of our dollars going towards congestion relief. And I would guess if you asked MnDOT, you know, where this section ranks on their congestion in the metro, it is very high up there. And so that's why they're addressing it with a short-term plan. But again, I would ask this committee to do some very serious consideration if the difference between 34 and 50 isn't worth doing it right.
It's an excellent question. We'll ask MnDOT. And you know what their answer is going to be? We need more money. You know, and that's and we're going to... You know, that's going to be the prevailing theme of the day. These are all worthy projects, and absolutely we should be doing them right. And we've had the benefit of the Transportation Finance Advisory Committee report and the benefit of the TRIP report and others. So my benediction at the opening of the committee and at the end will be a lot of work to do between now and the end of session if we're going to pass a comprehensive transportation bill so that we can do all of these projects. So, anything further, members, on Senate File 239? All right. Do we need to take it? All right. So the chair will lay Senate File 239 on the table for possible inclusion in our omnibus transportation finance bill.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Tomasoni.
When you say all of these projects, was I supposed to have a bill in today? Or?
Yeah, you lose. Sorry, we specifically excluded yourself. No, I said you weren't here. If we need to do more show and tell, hear from our... I'm familiar with your...
All right, good.
I think it's the whole reason you're on the committee, right? Very good. All right. Thank you, and thank you for staying inside of time.
Much.
I thought I'd mention to those gathered. I just did the math, and if we're going to get through all these, we have about... 18 minutes and 45 seconds per. So just keep that in mind. And we have a timer going. So very good. Welcome to the committee, Senator Scalzi. Senator Scalzi, you have, I've just lost track, two bills. We have Senate File 59 and Senate File 61. One has to do with the TCAP and one has to do with an interchange near there. Proceed as you wish, Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And as you said, I have two bills. And keeping with the tradition of Senate newcomers, I have brought a treat here to share with the committee as well. So that'll be coming around, so help yourself.
Excellent. We might find a little space in this bill for...
Well, I'm trying to do my best. Yeah. My first bill, which is Senate File 59, is for infrastructure. It's a day, I guess, for congestion and economic development. So I'm sure that you're going to be hearing more about this. This first bill is about the Twin Cities Arms and Ammunition Plant, as we lovingly refer to it as TCAP. And if you remember some time ago, this was almost a Viking stadium. And it didn't become a Viking stadium. And one of the reasons stated for why it couldn't make the grade was because the roads just didn't work. And that's true. The highways are congested and deficient. And here with me today is Arden Hills Mayor David Grant, former Senator, current Ramsey County Commissioner Mary Jo McGuire, coming back to the Senate to visit you.
Welcome, Senator / Commissioner McGuire. We're so happy to see you.
Thank you so much.
And Ramsey County Public Works Director Jim Tolis. So we'll start with Commissioner McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Scalzi. It's great to be able to say that, and it's truly an honor for me to be here among all of you. It's great to see you in the chair, Mr. Chair, and all of you around the table. So I'm excited to be here to talk about the priorities of the Ramsey County Board, and I know that we're all today going to be talking about priorities in relieving congestion throughout our metropolitan area. And I would just echo my former colleague, Senator Bonhoff, in saying that we support doing the right thing for the long term, that these are all projects that we could do Band-Aids on, but we really want to do them right the first time. So this is really a jobs and economic development bill. We have a piece of property that, as Senator Scalzi said, the TCAP property, that is the largest Superfund site in the state of Minnesota. We have acquired that to clean it up and get it ready for jobs and economic development in our northern suburban region. So this will serve as a development and a catalyst for economic development and job creation in Ramsey County, the North Metro, and the entire state of Minnesota. We have businesses in that area that include Cummins Diesel, Medtronic, St. Jude Medical, Land O'Lakes, and Par Nuclear. These are all businesses in that northern area that would benefit from the transportation issues that we would like to see funded in this bill. And so timing is critical. We know that is the case. Housing, commercial real estate markets are beginning to recover, but this is the time to really do the development now. So I appreciate the tough decisions that you're going to have to make, and I just encourage you to fund this, you know, these issues as best you can so that we can really get this work done for the citizens of Minnesota.
And I neglected to mention, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the map that we have. You probably have it in your packet.
Yes, yeah.
It shows what we're talking about from an aerial view. And then we have here Mayor David Grant from the city of Arden Hills, who's there. His city is cooperating with Ramsey County in the development of this property.
Yes. Welcome, Mayor.
Mr. Chairman, Senators, the productive reuse of TCAP is of primary importance to the city of Arden Hills. The city and the county have formed a unique partnership in the interest of redevelopment of the TCAP property. The city and the county have entered into a joint powers agreement, which creates a streamlined development review process. That joint powers agreement creates a joint development authority comprised of two county commissioners, two city council members, and one Arden Hills resident who will serve as the chair. The development authority will review TCAP development proposals. The city fully supports the county's acquisition of the property and this transportation funding request. As you know, the city has seriously evaluated a number of proposals in the past, and the county's plan for TCAP is most closely aligned with the goals of the city and provides a feasible path to redevelopment. The city is committed to completing a master plan for the site by mid-2014. That will provide a framework for the mixed-use development.
And
Senator.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and we also have with us Ramsey County Public Works Director Jim Tolis, who's been working on these projects.
Welcome, Mr. Tolis.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. As indicated, this is a large site and a Superfund site, and once cleaned up offers a great opportunity. If you refer to your map, and on the back side it shows proximity to the Twin Cities, it's only 12 miles out of Minneapolis, 13 out of St. Paul. It is western boundary is along I-35W and U.S. Highway 10. Its south boundary is County State Aid Highway 96. It lies about 1 mile north of I-694. Also in this area, there's a northwest quadrant for the city of New Brighton that's on the west side of 35W, and Arden Hills has additional expansion area in this vicinity. In order to make this site work, although it's positioned very well, it isn't connected well to the interstate system or the trunk highway system. And for a very long time in this area, we've identified many improvements, and we've heard about congestion today along 694 and 35W. This is a fairly modest request to just address a few specific areas that we've identified for some 15 years. Highway 96 came back on the county state aid highway system back in the mid-1990s. At that time, we identified I-35W and 96 as a critical interchange area and have long held off pushing for its reconstruction pending some resolution of what would happen to the TCAP site. Other improvements have continued in the area along Highway 96. But as this site moves forward with development, it would need higher capacity at that interchange area. It is currently failing under existing traffic levels. With the advent of an additional 113 acres in the northwest quadrant that will likely be redeveloped if there's economic growth and other development in Arden Hills. It's also important to connect this site in two specific areas. The first is identified as the very south boundary along Highway 96. In 2002, when that portion of 96 was reconstructed, it was configured to allow a major access point to the TCAP property site. So the first element of connection would be a major signalized intersection to serve that south boundary. Along with that, we would stub in what will be a future spine road, which would act as a backbone of the street system and utility system within the site. A second point of access that I think is critical is an existing interchange at County Road H, or at the interchange itself known as Highway Avenue and 35W. That is currently missing a northbound exit ramp and has capacity issues because of its size and age. MnDOT has actually identified this structure for replacement in 2015, and we're suggesting what a great opportunity to add that missing movement at that interchange and size it according to the development potential of TCAP. And lastly would be the finished connection of the spine road through the site. And again, this acts as a backbone for other street system components that would be added as development is identified. On the back of your, I think you have a second graphic that identifies those specific elements and what some of those costs are.
Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And if there's any questions, we'll gladly answer any of those questions. As they stated, this is 427 acres. Huge, almost a Viking stadium, but huge opportunity for development in the Northeast Metro.
Great. Any questions, members?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, it occurs to me these are coming from the economic development account, which is the TED, right?
Right, the TED account, correct, which I believe the governor has placed.
Which is sort of under your jurisdiction and sort of under mine?
Yes. We can duke it out.
Yeah, so we'll have to figure that out. But how much is in there?
The governor proposes to put in $20 million over the biennium.
That's what I thought. So, right. So that's the amount that we're dealing with as far as the governor's budget is concerned, and this particular bill is asking for all of it and $15 million more? Is that what I'm looking
at? Senator Tomasoni, correct.
Okay.
But, you know, the governor proposes the legislature disposes. So.
All right.
We know what we want.
Making sure I wasn't sure if it was 20 million or 200 million because I knew there was some
yeah,
zero.
20, 20.
Could we enlarge it to 200?
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner McGuire.
Thank you. While we appreciate what the governor has done, we certainly would appreciate even more the fact that the legislature has the ability to do what they want with those funds and would appreciate your consideration in increasing that amount for the projects.
Mr. Chair, I sort of remember when Commissioner McGuire was here, she wasn't shy about asking for money for the St. Paul delegation either, so maybe.
And St. Paul did pretty well with her leadership.
For the benefit of the entire state of Minnesota in this regard, in terms of economic development. Also.
Yes, we're one Minnesota. I see Commissioner Tony Carter here. Welcome to the committee. Commissioner Carter, you're here to support this as well? All right, good. Happy to have you here. Anything further, members? Senator Scalzi, anything further?
No, we'll just move into the next bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for looking at Senate File 59, which is a bipartisan bill. So
saw that, yes.
Thank you.
All right, and Chair will lay Senate File 61. 59. I'm getting myself confused. Got too many papers scattered. Senate File 59 on the table for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Finance Bill. We will move on to Senate File 61, which deals with the interchange at Rice Street and 694. Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My second bill here today, Senate File 61, is for funding for the design for the replacement of the Rice Street Bridge over Freeway 694. I've got some interesting things in the packet, and I'm going to point them out to you. First of all, I have copies of letters of support from the companies in the area. I have copies of letters from Land O'Lakes, from Deluxe Corp., from Cummins Power Generation, and a number of other. And we have also letters from all of the cities in the area. I didn't pass those all out because I didn't want to inundate you with paperwork. But the one interesting letter that I've always enjoyed is the letter from November 1st of 1999. And it's a MnDOT letter. And in this letter, MnDOT tells us that this bridge is going to be replaced in 2004. Now, Commissioner Tony Bennett from Ramsey County worked on this. I mean, here it is 2012, and granted, we needed to do the unweave the weave. We needed to do all the work between 35E and 35W. But this was designated to be replaced in 2004. It's still on their list. It's unfunded. So we've got to do something about this, because what MnDOT has done in the interim, they did unweave the weave, which is a 12-lane freeway between 35E and going over to 35, where it comes from Duluth and to where it goes to St. Paul. So there's 12 lanes there. Six lanes go directly into this spot. Three can go down into St. Paul, but there's only room for two lanes to go in this spot, in addition to the lane to the people that are coming from St. Paul to go northwest. So it's a great pinch point, and we've created a great problem there. And on that congestion map that you looked at, that Senator Bonhoff had passed out, we are on the page 10 that where she talked about. We are at the very top. We're at the Northeast Metro, where 35E and 35W funnel down, and then you see the word 694, and that's precisely the point where the black line comes in and no cars can get through. So it's a troubled area that has been designated to be replaced for quite some time, and we're just here trying to, you know, get it on the map and get it to be replaced. So here we have today, in addition to Commissioner Mary Jo McGuire and Ramsey County Public Works Director Jim Tolis, we have Shoreview Mayor Sandy Martin. So Sandy would like to say a few words. She's been the mayor of Shoreview for a number of years and knows the area very well.
Welcome to the committee, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm not a frequent visitor down to the Capitol, largely because Shoreview has become somewhat self-sufficient over the years. We get no state aid, and we've been forced into self-sufficiency. But we do need your help now on this really, really critical issue. And I will tell you, Senator Scalzi is a great historian, and you have to be a historian here to be able to remember back to 1998. I actually have been mayor of Shoreview for 16 years, and during that time, the Rice Street Bridge and the 694 improvements have been part of my agenda, I think, every single year. And in fact, in 2001, Shoreview initiated a task force made up of our neighboring communities, Little Canada, Vadnais Heights, and we worked on planning for that 694 interchange. We worked with MnDOT and Ramsey County, Metro Transit, and our neighboring cities. And we actually cooperated with the Met Council to purchase from Ramsey County the 12-acre public works site. That was meant to be a very short-term loan. It was meant to prevent any unwarranted or unwanted development at that interchange prior to the time that the bridge would be replaced in 2004. So here we are, it's 2013. We need a new bridge at Rice Street. We really, really do. And we also need those improvements to 694. The great progress that we made with the Unweave the Weave project, a great help and beneficial to everyone. The work that's being done now west of Shoreview, Lexington and West, in replacing the five bridges, that's been very beneficial. But what it's done is it's helped everybody get there faster, but when they get to this two-mile segment, they have total gridlock. And if you haven't seen it, you need to see it in the morning and the afternoon. Nobody moves. It just sits there. And it's a really, it's not just a congestion issue. It is an issue for the businesses in the community. And in that little 2-mile segment, we have over 35,000 jobs just within a 2-mile segment. We last year, we added Cummins Power Generation with its 600 employees. They created their new world headquarters in Shoreview. We have Par Systems, Par Nuclear. We have TSI. We have now, believe it or not, we have a Trader Joe's at Lexington and 694 that was greatly sought after by our community. So this congestion is a real problem for our businesses and for our communities. And I just really ask for support. We've been very patient, I think, over the last 12 or 15 years. And some people would say that perhaps we've been too patient and waited for things to happen instead of coming down here and really pleading and begging. So that's what we're doing now, and we hope we'll be included in the transportation bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. We'll accept shoes pounding on the table, too. That's all good.
I'll pull them out.
All right. Senator Scalzi.
Yes, and I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'd like to have Mary Jo McGuire, Commissioner McGuire.
Commissioner McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Scalzi. I'm going to be brief because my colleagues have so wonderfully represented this bill already, but I appreciate, Mr. Chair, that you recognize my colleague, Commissioner Carter, for all, and being in the audience to support this bill. Also, the board, before I got there, has done really a lot of work and worked really hard to make sure that, you know, we have, you know, good transportation proposals in Ramsey County. And I just want to say this is a priority for our county board. We have a very limited legislative agenda this year, and these are two of our legislative priorities. And we can't stress enough the benefit to the entire state that the economic development that these interchanges would bring to our area and to the tax base for the whole, for the entire state. So we would really appreciate your support in this way.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and I'm sympathetic to your cause because I drive that stretch every day.
Yes.
Back and forth, so that always kind of helps. But a question I have about your letter here from a engineer, the area engineer, and I've noticed this as well. I'm not quite sure, so maybe you can address it. And in one of the paragraphs, that MnDOT is not utilizing all the lanes that were constructed in the Unweave project. Could you explain that a little bit more? I found it sometimes as well, too, that I don't know if it's just striping or if there's more opportunity there to make better use of that.
Senator, what they did in the on the completion of the Unweave project is they striped it down so that you didn't have all of those lanes going into the 694 Rice Street area. In fact, initially they opened the bridge that came northbound on 35 to westbound 694. They had it as one lane. They ultimately changed it to two lanes because the backups were so severe. But there's additional pavement out there. It will allow for additional lane configuration, but it's relying heavily on this interchange being upgraded.
So, Mr. Chairman, it sounds like it's a throttle down area. There's opportunity, but just help keep it in a structural pattern. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Any further questions, members? Senator Scalzi, anything further?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. And thank you for that question, Senator Kiffmeyer. That's the important thing. That's the crux of the whole situation, is that we did construct on Weave the Weave. I mean, you're going to be able to get from Duluth and Wisconsin all the way over, but you can't get under that bridge because it's too narrow. So that's the problem. And I don't know if you have anything to add.
Mr. Tolles.
Well, I would call attention to the graphic that was passed out. This is actually from 2005 when MnDOT completed an environmental assessment and preliminary design effort.
So, Mr. Tolles, this is the one that says I-694 expansion project segment 4?
Correct. Right. And coupling with the commitment MnDOT made at the time Trunk Highway 49 was jurisdictionally transferred to Ramsey County was it would be completed in 2004. The reason it was initially delayed was to allow the unweave section of 35W or 35E and 694 to be completed first, with this promised on its heels. It was then delayed to 09, then 11, 12, 13, 15, and now it's out of the 20-year plan. So this is a long, it's been designed at a level at least that we have a very good idea of what the costs and the benefits are. And it is critical to have this in place in order to accommodate a third lane. The third lane concept for the Beltway around the Twin Cities has been talked about for as long as I can remember and is critical to the commerce in this area. We've got about 100,000 vehicles per day trying to get underneath that bridge. And it truly is a bottleneck if there ever was one. So,
great, thank you. Anything further? Members, questions? Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I really appreciate your time. I know you have a full schedule, so we'll get out of your way here. And it's about congestion, and it's about economic development for the state. These companies like Land O'Lakes, I mean, these are Fortune 500 companies. They want to add employees, and they can't because they can't get their employees, their visitors, their customers to their facilities. And that's not good for all high-paying jobs in Minnesota. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. So the chair lays Senate File 61 on the table for possible inclusion in the Transportation Finance Omnibus Bill. Next up, thank you very much, Senator Scalzi. Next up we have Senate File 168, Senator Jensen, Trunk Highway 14, construction and upgrade to four-lane divided highway and appropriation. Members, Highway 14 has been in front of this committee a number of times in years past, and they return to us. And I'm grateful to them. Represents a number of communities along a long stretch. To the folks part of the Highway 14 Coalition, I just say we have a bunch of new kids on the committee, so it's time for us to learn about Highway 14.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr.
Senator
Chairman.
Jensen. Senator Rest.
Can we turn off the computer and put the screen down?
Oh, sure.
So it's not going right on his face?
Yeah, that'd be good.
There we go. Thank you, Senator Rest. Senator Jensen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to apologize. I didn't know the rule that we were supposed to bring treats. So I didn't have those, but I did bring an amendment. Is it appropriate to do that now? Okay.
If it's a sweet amendment, sure.
Mr. Chair, rain checks are permissible.
Yeah, Senator Jensen, yeah. We'll be hungry at our next committee meeting, I'm pretty sure. So.
Well noted.
All right. So Senator Jensen has the A1 amendment. I believe that's coming around now. This is the bill. This is the Committee of Original Jurisdiction, and this is an author's amendment. So all in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed, no?
Thank you.
Amendment passes. To the bill, Senator Jensen has amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to highlight the transportation needs in southern Minnesota and the importance of the completion of Highway 14. I'll be brief because, as you can see, we have a lot of people that came to testify before you today. For those of you that have been here a while, the chair mentioned that it's been around for a while. You're probably getting tired of hearing this bill. It was first discussed in the 1960s in an effort to provide safe travel across the southern corridor of the state and to connect regional centers in southern Minnesota. That's why we've packaged the completion of Highway 14 into a single bill, because the only solution that will work and meet the economic and safety needs of southern Minnesota is a full four-lane road from Rochester to New Ulm. You'll hear statistics today regarding the economic benefits and the lives lost on the highway, and I'm not advocating that those statistics are any more important than any of the other projects that you'll hear today or any of the other ones that you're fighting for in your district, but they are things that you need to know about that, about the project. Mm-hmm. I'm also here to explain that I feel like this is kind of the poster child for what's wrong with the transportation system due to the lack of transparency and to the lack of funds. A system that has forced the people along that project to fight for their project within their district. So what's been happening is, although it's been on the priority list, as other things come up, it keeps getting bumped down further down the list. I look forward to working with the chair and the committee and the Department of Transportation to try to resolve some of these issues. And, Mr. Chair, you asked at our first meeting of the Transportation Committee if we had anything we wanted to share or a quote, and I did have one that I didn't at that time. I'd like to share it now, and it's from Will Rogers. Even if you're on the right track, you'll get run over if you just sit still. So with that, I'd like to introduce Amanda Doerr.
Thank you.
She's from the U.S. Highway Department.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Welcome back to the committee, Ms. Doerr. For members who don't know, Ms. Doerr used to staff this committee, so she knows what she's talking about.
Well, it's very nice to be here, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. I'm Amanda Doerr, representing the U.S. Highway 14 Partnership. Just wanted to briefly explain to you, if, as you see in the handout, the map that I gave you, when we talk about completing U.S. Highway 14, we are discussing two segments between Rochester and New Ulm that are in need of an upgrade from 2 to 4 lanes, and those are reflected in the red segments. That's from Dodge Center to Owatonna, and then Nicollet to New Ulm. The segment there that's noted in green from North Mankato to Nicollet is the portion of the highway that last summer Governor Dayton committed to completing the four-lane expansion, and that will take place in 2017 or 2018. Just briefly was going to talk about some of the safety statistics about Highway 14. And then I will turn it over to our membership. But from 2002 to 2011, between Rochester and New Ulm on Highway 14, there are 52 fatalities and 41 serious injury crashes. This highway has a fatality rate above the statewide average. And in 2012 alone, preliminary unofficial tally shows 8 fatalities and 4 serious injuries. And this included 4 within a span of about 36 hours in November, including a little boy on his way home from getting cancer treatment at the Mayo. I'm going to turn it now over to the U.S. Highway 14 Partnership, Les Abraham.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
You can please introduce yourself and then proceed. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Les Abraham. I'm the president of the Owatonna City Council and president of the Highway 14 Partnership. An immediate priority of the partnership is to make sure that MnDOT includes the four-lane expansion of Highway 14 on its 20-year state highway plan investment plan. This plan prioritizes how state and federal transportation resources will be invested. Any current or future transportation funding will be allocated on the projects that are included in the planning document. If Highway 14 is left off the plan, progress to complete the regional corridor will be stalled, economic development or opportunities will be lost, driver safety will be jeopardized, and project costs will only increase. We really can't allow this to happen. Now, thinking back in 1968, when I got out of the Army, I came home to read in the paper that Highway 14 was going to be completed in a four-lane manner from Rochester to Mankato. That was 1968. We got part of it done. We don't have it all done. But we do appreciate and deeply appreciate that last summer, the Governor Dayton committed to completing the four-lane expansion from Highway 14 from North Mankato to Nicollet. And this work will begin 2017 or 2018, but we cannot let the progress of Highway 14 stop there. As you'll hear from our members, a consistent four-lane corridor from Rochester to New Ulm is the only solution that meets the long-term safety and economic needs of our southern Minnesota area. And I will now turn it over to Katie Nelson, who is a member of our Owatonna Chamber.
Thank you, Councilmember Abraham. Ms. Nelson.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Thanks for having us today. As Les mentioned, I'm with the Owatonna Area Chamber of Commerce and Tourism and wanted to share with you a story from our community with our healthcare campus with Owatonna Hospital, which is an Lahaina hospital, as well as Mayo Clinic has a campus in Owatonna as well. You'll hear other examples today from other testifiers of the transport of freight and the importance of that and the economic impact to our region. But also, on behalf of Owatonna Hospital, they are transporting patients, which obviously has a huge impact to their facility. They have shared with us that in 2011 they transported 266 patients by helicopter because of the condition of Highway 14 and the safety concerns. So I wanted to share that with the committee today. And at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Noreen Otto with Hy-Vee.
Welcome, Ms. Otto.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. As Katie said, my name is Noreen Otto, and I represent Hy-Vee. We have 16 stores and over 5,000 employees here in Minnesota. Half of our stores are located along the Highway 14 corridor and includes also two convenience store locations. Our company is unique in that we control the vast majority of our chain of distribution. We own a number of our subsidiary companies as well as own our fleet. We have over 400 drivers who log over 30 million miles annually, in addition to 4 million miles in Minnesota. We carry approximately 81,000 outbound loads from the company each year, in addition to 42,000 backload and contract freight loads, including with some companies here in southern Minnesota. We operate as an industry on very slim margins, and safe, dependable access to our stores is paramount to our ability to function and thrive. In addition, our towns and smaller communities are dependent on a regional workforce. We employ everyone from first-time jobs and high school students to professional pharmacists and chefs and dietitians. We pull a lot from surrounding communities, and each of our stores has somewhere between 300 and 500 employees. The Highway 14 region is where most of the growth for our company is planned here in the state. We are planning to make tens of millions of dollars of capital investment in the future here in Minnesota, and we ask that the members of the committee make that capital commitment to Highway 14 so we can continue to grow here in the state as well. With that, I'd like to pass it along to Jonathan Zier with the Greater Mankato Growth.
I'm starting to believe you guys have done this before or rehearsed this. I don't know. This is very slick. All right. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Zier.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, my name is Jonathan Ziert, and I'm the President and CEO for Greater Mankato Growth. Greater Mankato Growth is a combined Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development organization with over 800 member businesses serving the Greater Mankato regional marketplace, and it's really my pleasure to be here today and talk to you a little bit about, from our business community's perspective, why Highway 14 is the vital economic corridor that it is to the marketplace, and not just our regional marketplace, but to the state. I'm going to make 2 points with you today and a couple of pieces that support that. First, just how important is Highway 14 as an economic lifeline for our region and thereby the state. Every day there are countless businesses and the individuals that work in those businesses that use this highway as a corridor to move goods, to move services, to move themselves and their families. We recently had an opportunity to visit with one of our manufacturers who employs about 350 employees in the Mankato marketplace. More than 50% of their employees commute in from outside of the Mankato, North Mankato marketplace. That means that those employees are using corridors like Highway 14. And if you extrapolate that to the marketplace that has about 54,000 employees, roughly 22,000 employees or more are commuting every day into the Mankato, North Mankato marketplace to work. That's a lot of cars that are traveling on one of three corridors, the main one being Highway 14. From an interaction with our businesses, we know that they continue to have frustration in moving their goods, their services, and their employees. So we know that those delays and those concerns they have traveling on Highway 14 are of increasing concern to them. Related to that, the growth along the Highway 14 corridor that's expected for the regional marketplace as well as the state is really quite significant. And good news for all of us. According to the state demographer, five of the counties along the corridor, Blue Earth, Dodge, Nicollet, Olmsted, and Steele, are going to experience population growth that ranges anywhere from 13 to 33% by 2030. This means that the regional economy along Highway 14 is going to continue to expand as well. Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development has said that by 2020, special freight trucking is going to increase by more than 50%, building equipment contractors by 43 to 54%, medical offices over 30%, and general freight trucking over 21%. And as many of you know, Mankato itself will be home to a future Midwest Walmart distribution center with construction to begin in the near term. That date hasn't been announced yet, but that's inevitable that will happen. And so that in and of itself, along with the additional growth that happens in the marketplace and the population itself is going to continue to add pressures on what today is already a heavily traveled, heavily used corridor that's really a vital lifeline to this economic marketplace. So our appeal to you is, as a committee, that you'll see the value of this regional corridor, not just for the region, but for the state itself. And as the region continues to grow, you'll continue to be a supporter of that and make this a priority in any legislation moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zierk. Yep.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Aaron Lombrecht. I own a company by the name of Shelter Products. We're a wholesale distributor out of New Ulm. I also live on Highway 14 just west of Nicollet. In 2012, MnDOT did a safety audit, and it was found that between New Ulm and Mankato, the severe crash rate is three times that of expected crash rates along rural two-lane roads. It also identified some numerous unsafe intersections and recommended action, including the intersection at Highway 14 and 15, which happens to be right where my business is located, and it is recommended that they upgrade that interchange in 2017 or 18 when they're doing the bridge that has been funded. However, the interchange has not been funded, and we really need to change that. My wife and I, as I said, live on Highway 14. We do not allow our children to ride the bus because it is so unsafe to have the bus stop on Highway 14 for them to either get on to go to school or to get off coming home. That has caused my wife to actually rearrange her work schedule, and she takes our kids to and from school each day on a very dangerous highway. We actually had to buy a new vehicle because we feel it is so unsafe going onto the road. There, on a business side, I estimate that there's between 1,000 and 1,200 trucks based out of the city of New Ulm, which is a population of only 12,000 to 13,000 people, so you can see that it's highly dedicated to commercial traffic. As far as our business, we depend on incoming freight, and the cost of that incoming freight is significantly higher due to the highway than our competitors in Sioux Falls, St. Cloud, La Crosse, Minneapolis. That makes us less competitive in the market and hampers our ability to grow in the southern region, and because of that, we are currently analyzing our growth potential and looking for certainly other regions of the state of Minnesota and most likely other states within the central United States for the expansion of our company. That's what I have to share. I'd like to introduce Roy Serp, the mayor of Waseca.
Thank you, Mr. Lambert. Welcome, Mayor.
Good afternoon. My name is Roy Serp. Thank you for letting us be here, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Roy Serp. The last name is SRP, no vowels. That's not a misprint, just so you're clear with that.
Misspell Commissioner McGuire's name earlier. We apologized already. Mayor.
I've been in local government in Waseca for 20 years now, and I'd also like to let you know that I recently retired from the railroad after 43 years, so I'm very familiar with transportation. And what I'd specifically like to address is Highway 14, of course, and the fact that no matter if it's a railroad or it's a highway or it's a barge, a bottleneck anywhere is not a good operation of a transportation system, and we have more than one bottleneck on Highway 14, and they need to be taken care of. I won't be near as eloquent as my colleagues are because this is the first time I've been here, and I'm by no means slick. But I do need to plead the case for Highway 14. It's very important that we get that corridor finished, completed. I'm a very blessed mayor, and the citizens of Waseca are very blessed as we have our four-lane finished. But that doesn't make us any more or any less supportive of the rest of the communities up and down the corridor. I have never in the 20 years of public service I've been in had a situation that connected more mayors, city councils, city managers, county commissions, and folks up here, as a matter of fact. This is very, very, very important. If the things that are proposed for Rochester weren't proposed, this would still be important to finish this. So we ask that MnDOT keep this in the 20-year plan and ask your support in doing that. Thank you very much for allowing us to be up here today.
Thank you, Mayor. Senator Jensen, well, let me recognize Senator Dames. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Senator Dames, did you want to?
Thank you.
We welcome your presence and your support for this bill and this effort. Did you want to share any thoughts?
I'll have some questions when it comes to that point, but
all right.
Thank you, Senator.
I think we're at
that
point.
I appreciate the opportunity.
So, Senator Dames, we're at that point, so we'll give you the first question. All right.
Senator, Mr. Chair and some of the testifiers here could tell me. As I understand, the Highway 14 from New Ulm to Mankato is certainly a very, very unsafe stretch of highway, but as I understand, it's also a stretch of highway that has quite a high percentage of trucks to cars and probably one of the higher ones in the state. Does anybody know what that ratio is?
We'll let the slick member of the contingent, Amanda Dewar, respond.
You know, I have a copy of, I'm sorry, Senator Dames, Mr. Chair, I have a copy of the MnDOT safety audit of that portion of the highway that I bet it's in there. I'll look through that and report back. But off the top of my head, I don't have it. But, yes, I know I can find that information.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chair, the reason I bring that up is that is a very unsafe piece of highway, and we do have, as we heard earlier from the testifiers, a lot of truck traffic coming out of New Ulm. We have a lot of headquartered truckers coming out of there, and so it is a real dangerous situation that we really need to be taking a look at. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Questions, members? Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe just a comment and then perhaps a question, but this is also part of my neck of the woods, and it's been one long sought for, certainly in terms of getting that upgraded, and it's coming along, but there are these couple of stretches yet that need to be done. I personally know an individual in each one of these extensions that's not here today because of an auto fatality, and it's long been, I think, recognized as probably the most dangerous highway in Minnesota, sometimes for reasons which we don't quite understand, but it really is, I think, and the statistics bear that out. So, and then as well as southern Minnesota evolves economically, this is the artery which crosses southern Minnesota in terms of commerce and transport, and so very important not only from a standpoint of the industrial economy, but also the medical economy. So hopefully we can urge this along. I do have one question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Senator.
And maybe it's for MnDOT, and maybe I just need a head nod. And we've all been to countless meetings on this, but my understanding was and has been that the stretch between Owatonna and Dodge Center was about $160 million, depending on how many interchanges. And now today I see we're at $219 million. Is that, and I guess the question for MnDOT is, and maybe just a head nod, is that just a new estimate based on new information?
Who would like to nod
their
head?
Or for the witness, the author or anyone?
Who would like to nod their head or respond to Ms. Dewar?
Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum, those numbers are based on updated figures that I did receive from MnDOT District 6. I believe they took into account some inflation from the previous estimate to come up with those figures. But I don't want to speak for the department, but those were the cost estimates that were provided to me.
And Senator Senjum, the amendment did bring that amount down to 190.
Mr. Chair, I think that's for the New Ulm stretch.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong one. Oh, you're looking at the 212. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
And, Mr. Chair, just as long as I'm thinking about it, I don't know if anyone wants to mention the so-called environmental impact statement and its expiration if something doesn't happen here soon, but that does exist, and it maybe is not the end of the world, but I think to have to redo that statement's also a point of arduous work. And
right.
And so if we could move this along, I think we save a lot of time and a lot of money. And
yeah, Ms. Dewar or anyone at the table, I see that we've had that discussion in my office about the EIS, and I see that's on the final bullet point here on your handout sheet. Can we just help us understand what that issue is?
Mr. Chair and Senator Senjum, yes, final EIS statement under FHWA guidelines has a 3-year shelf life. The one for the Owatonna to Dodge Center portion of Highway 14 was completed in August 2010, so that would come to date August 2013. if no major action to complete a project occurs within 3 years, then it would need to be reevaluated. And a reevaluation, to be clear, is not necessary. It's not a new environmental impact statement, but it would just reevaluate, you know, the factors, the environmental and other traffic, you know, factors, and potentially could, you know, depending on how long major action took to occur, could lead to another environmental impact statement. You know, if major action on the project doesn't occur for another 20 years, it all depends. But it is, nonetheless, whenever the major action does start on the project, it is a process that will have to be undergone if it occurs after this three-year timeline, and could take anywhere from a couple months to a year. So it's obviously staff time and some expense that would go, that it's just kind of unfortunate for delays.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Summers, thank you. Members, any questions? Ms. Doerr.
I was just going to say, Mr. Chair, I have the answer to Senator Dame's question, if you'd like me to address
please.
That now.
Please, thank you.
It in the safety audit. Yes, you are correct. The heavy commercial truck traffic along that segment of Highway 14 between North Mankato and New Ulm is about 12.6%, and the statewide average is 8.9%, so significantly more traffic, and it's growing seven times faster than the statewide average, the commercial traffic there.
Thank you. All right. Senator Jensen, anything further?
No. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving us this opportunity again. I couldn't go anywhere in my district and not have a conversation about Highway 14. I can tell you that. And it's nice to have an opportunity to do it at this level. And I will continue to work on it as best I can and hope to work with the chair and the committee and, like I said, the Department of Transportation to try to get some of the answers that I still need. So thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Senator Jensen. So anything further, members? Chair lays Senate file number 168 as amended on the table for possible inclusion in our transportation finance omnibus bill. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dames. Moving on, Senator Peterson.
Is he here?
Oh, there he is. Senate File 378, Highway 10 in Armstrong Boulevard. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Mr. Peterson, Chair, proceed as you wish. Thank you.
Committee members, thanks for taking the time to hear this bill. Much like Highway 14, if you come to Northwest Anoka County, Highway 10 would be that road that everybody talks about and is long overdue for improvements. This bill in particular is talking about Armstrong Boulevard interchange. Aside from the obvious traffic flow benefits and business benefits to businesses in that area, the compelling state interest with this project is really centered around public safety. It's one of the most dangerous intersections in the state, certainly on that stretch of highway. In the interest of time, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to turn it right over to County Engineer Doug Fisher to make some of the more detailed points.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the division. My name is Doug Fisher. I'm the Anoka County Highway Engineer. And on behalf of the Anoka County Board of Commissioners, I'm here to support the Senate File 378. I would like to recognize that two of Anoka County Commissioners are here today. Commissioner Matt Look and Commissioner Robin West are also in attendance this afternoon.
Welcome to the committee. Glad to have you here.
In my testimony today, I would like to cover the what, where, why, and how of this project. I know my time is limited. You should have a packet containing this information as well, so I will go through this fairly quickly. What are we requesting? We're requesting $17 million. It should be a little bit smaller number than some of those you've already heard this afternoon. This would be for the design, right-of-way acquisition, construction of an interchange on Highway 10, and Armstrong Boulevard in the city of Ramsey in Anoka County. What are we proposing? Currently, Armstrong Boulevard connects to Highway 10 with a signalized at-grade intersection and this intersection is only 45 feet away from a dual-track Burlington Northern Santa Fe rail line. Our request is to remove this unsafe, inefficient intersection with a safe and efficient grade-separated interchange as shown. The project will also provide for the grade separation of Armstrong Boulevard over the railroad. This interchange is unique in a couple of ways. First, it must go over a railroad, therefore it is higher. And then also, we have to squeeze some on and off ramps between the railroad and Highway 10, which will require significant amount of retaining walls. Whenever you make an interchange unique, you make it very expensive. And that's one of our challenges here. I would like to note that the area in green and purple, and actually this part of this intersection, have already been completed using local funds, and this section of service road connection is slated for construction this summer. So we are moving forward with elements of this project, and actually this intersection here was actually built, tipped up in anticipation of it going up and over the railroad and then the interchange at Highway 10. So where is this? This project is located in the west central Anoka County in the city of Ramsey near the Elk River border. As you know, the corridor between Twin Cities and St. Cloud is one of the fastest growing corridors in the United States. Unfortunately, the freeway section of Highway 10 in Anoka County ends in Coon Rapids, and it is an expressway, or there are signalized at-grade intersections in the portion of Highway 10 in the cities of Anoka and Ramsey. If you're not totally familiar with this, I just threw this in here to show some comparable metro highways to Highway 10 as it relates to traffic volumes. On the outer reaches of these highways, we have traffic volumes in the 30 to 40,000 vehicles per day. As you get closer to the cities, it approaches 70,000 vehicles per day. So I show Highway 212 is similar traffic volumes, Interstate 35E, and Highway 52. All these are on the corners of the metro area. The big difference is the other three, besides Highway 10, are freeways currently. And if you drive those routes, can you imagine if any one of those interchanges were a signalized intersection, how horrible that would be? That's the nightmare that we're experiencing with our section of Highway 10 in Anoka County. So why do we want to do this? Obviously, as Senator Peterson mentioned, safety, and I'm going to go over some safety numbers, quite staggering, not only from the traffic safety standpoint, but the emergency response standpoint, but also talk about some of the other issues as well. I know this may be hard to see, but from an engineering standpoint, we love to look at these things. This is a crash diagram. What this really will tell you is that this intersection is higher than the metro average. And when you actually look at those other highways that I showed, the 212, the 52, the Interstate 35E, our crash rate on Highway 10 is 4 to 5 times higher than that on the freeway section of 212. And it's nearly double that of Highway 52. That goes to show that freeways are very safe highways. These four-lane expressways, at-grade intersections, are very dangerous, and they have very high crash rates. The other thing that, from a safety standpoint, is that the Burlington Northern Railroad separates Highway 10 from a large majority of the city of Ramsey and Anoka County. We have the Mississippi River on one side, a railroad on the other side, and Highway 10 runs right through the middle. You can see on this example, or on this exhibit, the fire stations are north of the railroad tracks. The police station, north of the railroad tracks. Mercy Hospital, south of the railroad tracks. We have a very significant issue in emergency response. People traveling, there is really no reliable way unless you drive a considerable detour around this to get across the highway. This is a significant issue. Talking about mobility, you can see from this exhibit where the freeway ends, where we're talking about this section here, existing freeway speeds, 30 miles an hour. We have over 40,000 vehicles per day in this section of highway. In the next 20 years, it's only going to increase. It's only going to get worse. This is unacceptable levels of speed. when we look at the actual interchange area of Armstrong Boulevard at Highway 10, you can see the level of service rating for that intersection right now is an F. And you can see this report card of interchanges and intersections throughout this area. If my kids came home with a report card like this, somebody would be grounded for life. I mean, this is a horrible report card. And you can see a lot of these other intersections are intersections on our county roads, on our city streets. When Highway 10 fails, and it fails, all of our county roads and city streets supporting Highway 10 fail as well. It's a problem on the trunk highway that's being exacerbated on our county and city street system as well. Final thing to talk about, trying to get onto Highway 10. This graph would show that the majority of the green time on Highway 10 at the signalized intersection is for Highway 10 throughput. That's what it's built for. That's what's made for. So there's a long delay just to get on the Highway 10. But if you caught the end of a green cycle and you stop and then a train comes, this would show that at best you can wait 2.3 minutes to get on the Highway 10. At worst, if you hit a red light and then you hit a train, you could be sitting waiting to get on a highway 5.8 minutes. And that's some of the severe thing. And if you have a pregnant wife trying to get to the hospital, deliver a baby, that's 5.8 minutes. You don't want to be in a car. Tragically, in the past 6 months, we've had 4 pedestrian fatalities on this section of highway, not specifically at this intersection, but in this section of highway in Anoka and Ramsey. The most recent, that of a 16-year-old girl leaving her job at McDonald's. You might have seen this. It was widely publicized in the news. The accommodations for bikes and pedestrians along this corridor are lacking. Yes, there are push buttons at the signals, but the Highway 10 corridor is 175 feet across. So even if you do use the pedestrian push buttons at the signalized intersections, it takes 2 cycles. You have to go halfway, push it again, wait for the next cycle to go. So the pedestrian movements and the bike movements along this corridor are very lacking. We have a large Anoka County Regional Park along the Mississippi River. That's a big attraction. But everybody lives on the other side of Highway 10, and if they're trying to get to the park that you see down here, there's a real problem crossing Highway 10, and we feel that our project would solve that problem. This project would be multimodal. We just opened the new North Star station at Ramsey. This is part of the core development near the Ramsey City Hall. So we want to have a safe and efficient way for people to get to the North Star commuter rail station. We are less than 1/2 mile away from our interchange project to the North Star station. So this would be part of a multimodal project as well. I went too far. Let's talk about some of the economic jobs. Is a big issue for everyone. This interchange, it will serve as the West Gateway access to the core development site. This site encompasses over 400 acres of residential, commercial, retail, educational, and recreational venues. The core provides a unique combination of social and business environments. Along with the new North Star station that's embedded in this core development, we recently were happy to open the new VA Medical Center, which provides treatment to our veterans from a large area in the northwest suburbs and this part of the state. So from an economic and job creation standpoint, the construction project itself will create a significant amount of jobs. But also, when that interchange is built there, it will truly enhance the development opportunities for the rest of the core development, which will lead to future jobs. So how do we achieve our goal of getting the interchange? Obviously, funding is needed to advance it through the stage of developments. The preliminary engineering environmental assessment is done, or very near completion. We are now proceeding with final design for this project. We have secured some federal funds and local funds. We are moving into final design. The next steps will be land acquisition and construction of this project. To keep this project moving, we do need some additional resources to finish the job. While the city and county are actively moving forward with this project and spending our money, on this project. The fact remains, this is a United States highway. It's U.S. Highway 10 under the jurisdiction of the state, that being MnDOT. Our request is that the state fund its share of this project at the earliest extent possible. How do you do this? Now, we've heard earlier in the committee the legislature doesn't necessarily identify specific projects for appropriations. If you want to break that trend and do that for this project, we'd be more than happy for you to do that. But there are other mechanisms out there, and you heard earlier the TED program. There's also this SAM program. We feel that our project does compete very well under the economic development program, which is under DEED, which is the TED program, or MnDOT has the safety aspect. Our project was submitted under these categories the last time these areas were funded in the bonding bill, but they weren't funded at high enough levels. We were the next project in line, or we were told. Maybe everybody else was told we were the next project in line. But we heard earlier that the governor has proposed a $20 million TED. We would really like to see that be significantly higher. And we feel that if that's the money that or the mechanism we have to go through, we feel that we would be very competitive in that. So I do urge you when that discussion is brought up, these are good programs, and we would like to see high limits so that projects like ours might be able to be funded through that mechanism. Again, just to close here, we do have full support of our communities, and you're going to hear some testimony from the city of Ramsey shortly. I will say that MnDOT also supports the interchange at this location on Highway 10. In years past, we did at-grade safety improvements at nearby intersections of Ramsey Boulevard and Sunfish Lake Boulevard. We could do that because there was more separation between Highway 10 and the railroad tracks. When we tried to do a similar solution, at-grade solution at this place, with the railroad being that close, 45 feet away from Highway 10, there was no at-grade solution. So MnDOT agreed with us. The grade-separated interchange is the solution for this problem, and we have their support on that. Finally, on the left-hand side, you know, I would urge you, as disturbing, as depressing it is, here are a series of links to CARE 11 or WCCO or some other websites that do indicate some of the problems we've had on this corridor, the fatalities, the tragic Red Bull soldier killed in a car crash, again, the 16-year-old girl, another thing. So this is a critical corridor for Anoka County, and I thank you very much for allowing me to present this project to you this afternoon.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Fisher. Members, any questions? Senator Westrom.
Yes. I think he answered it, but at the very end you said the 16-year-old. Is that the one we recently heard about in the news that was walking across the road here and tragically got hit?
Mr. Fisher.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, yes, it was a 16-year-old girl. Thought she had a work shift at McDonald's. Turned out she didn't. She was actually walking back home after that and was killed crossing the highway on her way home.
Yeah. And I'm aware of the series of tragic incidents that have occurred along Highway 10. Definitely need to do something about that.
Thank you.
Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair, we have a couple other people who would like to provide some testimony, if
great.
That's all right.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators. My name is Sarah Stroman. I'm the mayor of the city of Ramsey. And joining me at the other end of the table is Councilmember Jason Tosse. He represents the part of our city that is bisected by Highway 10. And also here with us today is our city administrator, Kurt Ulrich. We just want to offer a few comments in support of Senate File 378. Highway 10 has long been a priority for the city of Ramsey, and I think the reasons are probably obvious after Mr. Fisher's testimony. Our focus now is on the Armstrong interchange for a couple of reasons. First, from an economic development standpoint, as Mr. Fisher mentioned, a safe and functional access at Armstrong Boulevard is integral to our mixed-use development, the core at Ramsey, which lies just east of the intersection at Armstrong and Highway 10. The major feature, or one of the major features of this development, is our new North Star train station. And so having that safe and functional access at Armstrong and Highway 10 is really essential to achieving our goals for the economic development that we had planned there, as well as providing multimodal transportation. The second reason that Mr. Fisher also highlighted really is from a public safety standpoint, and that is the video you see here playing here. At this point, I'd like to turn it over to Councilmember Tosi to talk about that aspect and show the video here that I think will illustrate the problem that we have in the city of Ramsey.
Councilmember Tosi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Yes, my name is Jason Tosi. I'm a council member in Ward 3 specifically that this highway bisects, and more interestingly, the railway. Since I got elected 2 years ago, I've been really bothering my legislative leaders, and that being Representative Aveler and then Senator Jungbauer and now Senator Peterson, so much to the point where I thought they were going to get a harassment restraining order against me about this particular intersection. And unfortunately, tragedy after tragedy is occurring on this. And this isn't so much as much as the accidents themselves. You're going to get those on major highways. I understand that. But really what it is a response of our law enforcement officials. When I am not harassing legislators, I'm actually a police officer. I'm a 14-year veteran. And first, and response is clearly crucial. We're a matter of seconds, and between minutes and seconds is a matter of life and death in many issues. And what I'm going to show you here is a major critical accident that occurred at Sunfish Lake Boulevard, not the intersection we're talking about. But why this is important is because our officers have no secure way to get on Highway 10. And I will go ahead and play it here. What you have here is a vehicle that was T-boned. So as you see there, it really is a first responder issue, that our first responders, if they're on the north side of those tracks, as you had heard in earlier testimony, all our both of our fire departments plus our police station are north of those tracks. Without a sure and guaranteed access to Highway 10, other than going down to Thurston and Anoka, that is extra minutes. Even going Code 3 lights and sirens, the chances of those officers getting there, if take a different case if it was a baby not breathing, an obstructed airway, and having responded to those calls myself, I can tell you how important it is where seconds compared to minutes. And that's why we really just think that this is one of the most crucial transportation issues in the entire county. So that's basically all I have.
Thank you, Councilmember Tosi. Questions, members? Senator Peterson.
Well, we'd just like to thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving us an opportunity to make this case here today and for the members. And again, we all understand that this bill will be judged in a global context of a larger package. We would just appreciate your sincere consideration. Thanks again.
Thanks. And I'll recognize former State Representative Tingelstad. Welcome to the committee. Glad to have you here. Served with her in the House on transportation issues. So.
Thank you.
So I do notice that it's written for GO bonds, which would be unusual for state trunk highway state facilities, but that's just a technical matter. We can deal with that.
However you want to find the money,
right,
Mr. Chair.
All right, thanks. So with that, The chair will lay Senate File 378 on the table for possible inclusion in our omnibus transportation finance bill.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate the presentation. Very compelling. The former commissioner Tinklenberg is here as well. Wow. You draw out the big guns, I see. All right. Excellent. So moving on, members, we're actually jumping off of bills per se, but continuing to hear similar presentations. We have the I-94 corridor project being presented to us by the Central Minnesota Transportation Alliance. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators. I'm Scott Merrick, Executive Director with St. Cloud Area Planning Organization. We're a member-based local government agency of cities, counties, and townships in the St. Cloud area. And we prepare a long-range transportation plan and a federal transportation improvement program for our region. So I'm here today to represent the position of our local governments in the St. Cloud area. We also have a couple other individuals that I think I'll let testify before I do my presentation. I might need a tech person to help me get this loaded here while these other individuals go ahead and speak.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair, committee members. My name's Rhonda Bach. I'm the president of the I-94 West Chamber of Commerce and also a board member for the I-94 West Corridor Coalition, here to support transportation, really moving from Maple Grove north and west out to St. Cloud and beyond to the vacation land that so much of our population enjoys. And also north to vacation land, and also bringing forward the issue of freight transportation. I-94 is a national artery for the transportation industry, and with the boom out in the North Dakota region, we've seen our traffic pick up as far as freight and that. And the coalition is aligning ourselves with this organization in really bringing the need for transportation funding to our region, in particular, really Maple Grove to St. Cloud, and then moving beyond. But a couple things of that I'd like to bring your attention to is, one, the accident rate out in our region has doubled over the course of the last years. And in speaking with the Ambulance Association, we really even have a difficult time getting ambulances out to our region. If you've ever been on 94, beginning at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, well past 6 o'clock, it's pretty much gridlock heading west, and in the morning from 6 to 9, pretty much the same thing going east. So it's very difficult to get our ambulances on site, so we do a lot of fly-ins. And then also just the fact for the quality of life for our folks who live in the region, our businesses such as J&B Foods, makers of no-name steaks, Reinhardt Food Service, and the many communities that are along our corridor. It's important for economic development reasons as well. So I don't want to maybe go over too much of your presentation, but the need has changed, I think, over the years. And I'd like to also mention that Senator Kiffmeyer will be bringing a bill forward as well in regards to this issue, of which we are incredibly thankful. Thank you.
And I'm guessing Senator Peterson would be supportive, too. Thank you. Please continue.
Yes, Merrick. Thank you, Chair Dibble and Senators. Again, we think we have our technical issues resolved. Before I begin, I guess I would just like to recognize MnDOT. There's a lot of good projects here today, and I know the Senator Dibble mentioned at the beginning of the proceedings that all of these projects are meritorious and deserve consideration. And MnDOT has a very tough job to accommodate all of these needs with very little resources. And the message that I think you'll find them communicating to you is that they currently have enough revenue to probably maintain their existing system, the bridges and the pavements, and probably not a lot more than that right now. So I think kudos need to be given to MnDOT for the political and technical challenge of dealing with all these needs that are out there and also dealing with the maintenance and the safety of their system. So, also, I want to give a special thanks to Senator Peterson and Kiffmeyer for their involvement in this project. The corridor that we're looking at, again, extends from the Maple Grove 494-694 split up through Rogers, the Highway 101 crossover from Rogers to Elk River, and then going up to Monticello, the Highway 25 crossover from Monticello to Big Lake, and then up further to the north and west, the Clearwater to Clear Lake crossover on Highway 24, and then ultimately up to Highway 15 in St. Cloud. Just a little big picture information about the growth in our corridor. This is a map from the State Demographer and U.S. Census Bureau that shows on the left the pro rata share of population as of the 2000 census. Central Minnesota had 12% of the state's population, and that's projected to grow to 17% by the year 2035, a 5% increase in total share, which, as you can see, is the greatest increase of any of the regions in the state. That also includes the Twin Cities metro area. Specifically within MnDOT District 3, Central Minnesota, ATP, there's a lot of demographic variables shown here: employment, households, labor force, historic population, and VMT, and also looking at forecasted VMT. All of those variables far exceed all the other regions in the state on a population, VMT, any of those variables.
So, Mr. Merrick, I'll just mention that VMT is vehicle miles traveled.
Yes, thank you, Senator. So any reasonable variable that you look at, Central Minnesota on a percentage basis has the largest increase both historically and projected moving forward. Just a little quick context of what the existing traffic conditions are in the corridor. Again, looking down to the south and east, the Twin Cities metro area, seven-county metro area, urbanized population as of 2010, 2.7 million people. Then up to the St. Cloud urbanized area to the north and west, 111,000 as of the 2010 census. So these are two growing economies that are kind of dependent upon each other. And I-94 is kind of the umbilical cord that connects both regions. Starting on the south and east end, today over 100,000 vehicles per day just north of Maple Grove, 95,000 at Rogers, 65, Albertville all the way up to St. Cloud in the low 40,000s. And you can see that compares to a four-lane capacity. Generally, from a planning perspective, you can handle about 60,000 vehicles per day. And just to remind you right now, the six-lane drops off at Rogers and two lanes to the north and west of there. The other big point I guess I would mention on this slide is the recreational peak. We do experience a recreational peak in the summer months with the Brainerd Lakes and the Alexandria Lakes traffic. A lot of that traffic crosses over at the Highway 24 river crossing in the Clearwater area, and that creates a huge bottleneck through that corridor as well. MnDOT in the early 2000s developed...
Excuse me, Mr. Merrick. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, on that resort peak, what are the numbers of traffic in the summer when you get to those peaks? Probably Fridays and Sundays, I assume.
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Chair, board members, I don't have the specific numbers on that in front of me. I guess I would have to defer that to MnDOT, but I would believe it wouldn't be unreasonable to assume a 20% addition to these numbers for a recreational peak.
Thanks. Senator Westrom. All right. That would be interesting. Anyone who's been stuck in that on Sunday evening. feels that reality. So, Mr. Merrick.
Mr. Chair, it feels like more than 20% when you're in it.
Yeah, it does.
Probably it's conservative. Chair Dibble, Senators, this is a slide that shows Minnesota's interregional corridor system. In the early 2000s, MnDOT developed what's called the IRC system, the major corridors that connect the urban centers in the state. They have what are called high-priority IRCs and medium-priority IRCs and low-priority IRCs. The 94 corridor is a high-priority interregional corridor and is also at a national level on the national highway system, which is on the highest level nationwide for the national freeway system. What this map shows is that the I-94 corridor is below the performance target for MnDOT, and this is out of their current transportation plan that was approved in 2009. Their performance target for a high priority IRC is 60 miles per hour or above, and anything that's 2 miles per hour or below that target is considered to be below that performance target, and those are shown in red. And as you can see, I-94, and there's a few other corridors in central Minnesota that make up that 6% figure that's below the 60-mile-per-hour target. This corridor, the 94 corridor, has 40% of the congestion on MnDOT's IRC system. It accounts for 1.6% of the system itself. Just real quickly, the FHWA has also a congestion analysis that they do nationwide. Looking back at 2007, I-94 was considered to be highly congested in the peak period from the Twin Cities north up to St. Cloud. And also looking forward, this is really an international freight corridor from New York all the way out to Seattle and through the North Dakota oil field areas. Looking forward to the year 2040, this corridor is projected to be highly congested, according to FHWA, all the way through the state. From a crash perspective, there's also issues. The crash and severity rates on this corridor between Maple Grove and Albertville are higher than the statewide average for a rural freeway, and also the segment between Rogers and Albertville are nearly twice the statewide average. From a tourism perspective, the I-94 corridor, and also heading up to the Brainerd Lakes area on Highway 10, I-94 accommodates 600,000 visitors annually to the Alexandria Lakes area and 1.25 million visitors annually to the Brainerd Lakes area. And, of course, that makes this I-94 river crossing in the Clearwater area a very, very critical piece of this. Just wrapping up here, from a freight perspective, I-94 is one of the state's highest truck tonnage and truck value corridors. And even with the economic downturn, we've seen this continue. You can see the corridors in red are the high tonnage corridors in the state. And heading out of the north and west from the Twin Cities, the I-94 corridor is one of just a handful of corridors in the state that have that status. The project that we're presenting to you today has undergone significant analysis by MnDOT over the last 10 years or so. Starting back in 2002, there was an interregional corridor plan done by MnDOT for this corridor through a consultant that recommended 10 lanes to Rogers, 8 lanes to Monticello, and 6 lanes to Clearwater. Also, there was in 2006, the environmental impact statement for I-94 to Highway 10 River Crossing in the Clearwater area that was completed, and that is sitting on the shelf right now waiting for funds. MnDOT's 2028 transportation plan that's in the process of being updated right now to the year 2033, I believe, and that will be presented to this committee later this year. But their currently held valid plan, which is a performance-based plan, recommends 6 lanes from Rogers to Clearwater and also recommends constructing the I-94-10 river crossing in the Clearwater-Clear Lake area. Recently in 2011, Central Minnesota Freight Study done by MnDOT recommended capacity improvements along Highway 10 and also the Mississippi River crossing in the Clearwater area. So I guess that just leaves us to the
the new MnDOT Minship plan to the year 2033. And that's, I guess, where we're looking for your consideration, the consideration of MnDOT, to, based upon this technical information, to consider having this project at a minimum as an unmet need showed in their future Minship plan. We do have broad-ranging support for this project, all the way from the congressional level, Senator Klobuchar and Franken and Congresswoman Bachman, as well as Congressman Paulson, have gone formally on record with MnDOT asking for their consideration and support of this project. The St. Cloud Area Planning Organization has a resolution of support that you see there. Some corridor counties, Stearns County, Wright County, and I believe Sherburne County is in the process of passing resolutions of support to MnDOT on this project. I guess that concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Merrick. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Dave Cashman. I am with Speedy Delivery Service and also Vice Chair of the Central Minnesota Transportation Alliance. The Transportation Alliance is a member organization primarily of businesses and local government agencies seeking to promote transportation within Central Minnesota and to advocate for the dollars. Especially since we are a donor district, we feel it's very important that we are before you. As for Speedy Delivery Service, we run about 85 routes from St. Cloud on down each morning. We're fortunate we don't leave till 8 o'clock in the morning, so we don't deal with that congestion to the same degree as many. However, I will point out on the eastbound direction, going through Monticello, going through Albertville, and St. Michael, particularly at 241, where traffic is merging on. All of those are dangerous points, as there is considerable traffic at those times. In the reverse, coming home each evening, we have considerable delays. And again, 241 is an intersection that is of particular danger. That, as well as the Highway 24 intersection, both of those places are intersections where traffic backs up onto the freeway. And as was previously mentioned, if you ever stop on an interstate, that is not the place to be, and there is no safety in that. So we strongly recommend your supporting this corridor, adding the dollars necessary, and we thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cashman. Anything further? Senator Kiffmeyer, Senator Peterson, did you want to add any thoughts?
Well, Mr. Chairman, with in regards to this particular area, I think what strikes me about this, and I've listened to the other presenters, like you said, the meritorious presentations are definitely there. I think the big thing as far as the state level, though, is that Interstate 94 is a critical line. Whether it's Camp Ripley, all the way through our freight traffic, safety traffic, and because it's a section that you have the river, there are choke points where you're stuck. And so there are just a number of areas like this that is probably a unique stretch in our state system, not just to within Minnesota, but, you know, as they've mentioned before, from the east all the way over to the west. It is really a critical area, and this is a choke point as has been recognized in safety issues. So I appreciate the time here to talk about this. I think it's always good when you feel it, you feel the pain, but the statistics and the numbers here support the case that we're making.
Thank you. All right.
Senator Kiffmeyer said it all.
All right.
I'm speechless.
Senator Peterson wields his power quietly. Great. Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Merrick?
Thank you.
All right. Great. Appreciate your time. Very, very helpful presentation. We're going to hear about Highway 212 in Carver County. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. My name is Robert Lindahl. I am chairman of the Southwest Corridor Transportation Coalition. have been for many years. The Coalition is a nonprofit which is composed of cities, counties, businesses, and individuals along the Highway 212 corridor. There have been advocacy groups like ours with respect to Highway 212 since the 40s, if not before. I just heard today about some reference to 1928, and I need to find out the history on that. In the early 1970s, U.S. Highway 212 was improved as a four-lane limited access highway from Glencoe to, in McLeod County to Norwood and Young America in Carver County. The late 1980s, new Highway 212, the four-lane corridor on a new alignment, was put on the official maps of Eden Prairie, Chanas, and Chaska, and Carver County. These communities and Hennepin County and MnDOT all cooperated then in the preparation of the environmental impact statement for the new Highway 212. In 1993, the federal government gave the EIS its approval. Again, the preparation of that EIS was a joint effort of the various communities and the state. In the early 1990s, new Highway 212 was added to the national highway system through the efforts of Senator Durenberger and other members of the congressional delegation. In 1999, construction of part of the new Highway 212 between I-94 and Eden Prairie Road was started in Eden Prairie. In 2002, MnDOT identified Highway 212 as one of the seven high-priority interregional corridors in the state because of its importance as a route connecting the metro area to western Minnesota. I think you have a map in your folder which illustrates it going all the way to South Dakota. But the point of this presentation is that there are two segments of 212, a high-priority corridor within Carver County that have never been widened to four lanes. So our objective is to get those two segments widened. On this map, you'll see that the Chaska would be the easterly terminus. Glencoe is the westerly, Norwood Young America is on the west. In between is a piece of Cologne that is four lane. So we have a segment at the east end and a segment at the west end on either side of Cologne that are two lanes and which desperately need to be widened to four lanes. In 2002, we secured 44 resolutions of support for the completion of new Highway 212 and these two segments. Those were obtained including every county board from Carver County to the South Dakota line, plus most if not all of the cities and a number of chambers of commerce. The first ones we received were from Lacqua, Pearl County, and the city of Dawson, the most westerly end of this project. It illustrates just how important 212 is to those people on the west end who are trying to reduce their travel time and increase their safety in getting to the metropolitan area. From 1978 through 2008, a 30-year period, I was on the Chaska City Council. During that time, completion of new Highway 212 was always one of the top five priorities of the city. Throughout the years, the coalition has enjoyed great support from our congressional delegation. As you can see from a table that was supplied to you, we have obtained over $19 million in earmarks for construction of new Highway 212. Most of that has been spent. There is one small piece that we have a pending project on, and Lyndon Robgent, the county engineer, is prepared to talk about that. We're pleased that in 2008, new Highway 212 was completed as far as the west edge of Chaska. However, these two remaining segments of two-lane create great bottlenecks that cause real safety problems, and Lyndon has some statistics about that. So our goal is to complete those two remaining segments, and we would very much request that you support the inclusion of $20 million for the first phase of this remaining work in the funding bill this session. We have a bill in preparation that soon we hope to have introduced. At this point, I'd call on Randy Maluchnik, Carver County Commissioner, to further address our needs.
Great, thanks. And I'm sorry, Mr. Lindahl, did you say $20 million?
$20 million.
Great, thank you.
The cost of the easterly segment to complete the whole segment from Chaska to Cologne is $80 million. The $20 million is just the most easterly piece of that $80
million. Okay, thank you.
Then the westerly segment we estimate to be $70
million. Thank you. Welcome, Commissioner.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Carver County Commissioner Randy Maluchnik. Representing the county board today here. Residents of Carver County have benefited immensely from the construction of new Highway 212 out to the city of Carver. As anticipated, this expansion of this critical corridor has not only improved the safety and the timeliness of our commutes, it has led to job creation and economic growth in our county and in the region. We're continuing to see new data centers located in our county, providing well-paying jobs that add real value to our community. The latest development from Stream Data Centers will be located northwest of Highway 212 and Engler Boulevard interchange in Chaska, joining the United Health Group facility that was completed just in 2012. Not to mention the recent opening of the Fleet Farm store as an anchor for the major retail district that will be serving the region hopefully in the near future at Highway 212 and County Road 11. Safety has always been our top priority in Minnesota, and the new Highway 212 to Carver has clearly led to fewer accidents and fatalities than on what was once an outdated, dangerous two-lane highway with more traffic than ever designed to handle. Our work on Highway 212 is not yet completed. This major corridor remains an important farm-to-market route and a prime connection to greater Minnesota. I'd like to say that again, Mr. Chairman, prime connection to greater Minnesota. All the way out to the border of South Dakota. There are still two segments of Highway 212 that Mr. Lindahl talked about in the county that need to be completed to four lanes. This situation causes the deadly hourglass effect where the road goes from four lanes to two lanes to four lanes to two lanes in a short period of time. This is on a road with extensive freight traffic truck traffic. The commercial haulers and the traveling public deserve better. It's time for the only two-lane, high-priority interregional corridor to be finished, building on the safety and capacity improvements we have already invested in. Leaving these two segments undone hurts the function of the entire highway. Carver County looks forward to our continued partnership with MDOT. With the last funding that we received, we have accepted the lead role in further engineering and interim work that will ensure a safer future for everyone who drives on this highway. My ask today, the county board's ask, would be to consider funding a road that not only serves the southwestern part of the metropolitan area, but also greater Minnesota all the way to South Dakota. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner Maluchnik.
At this time, I'd call on Lyndon Robgent, the Director of Public Works for Carver County.
Welcome, Mr. Robgent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Lyndon Robgent, Carver County Engineer. I'm just going to briefly go over, I know we're running out of time, of where we're at with our studies and where we want to go, and right, specifically the project that we're requesting funding for. You see on your map, there are three pieces that we've been studying, Part A, B, and C. Forgive me, they're not in any particular order, as you can see. And the one we're really focusing in is on Part B. That's similar to the project in Anoka County. There's been a lot of work already done. If you look on the middle of your page, there's some statistics about that part. That's the piece from the city of Carver-Chaska border, about 5 miles west to Cologne, where we hit the four-lane expressway that currently exists. It's a two-lane rural highway, very narrow shoulders. There's a picture there below that shows a truck, which is a very common occurrence on this roadway, built in the 30s or 40s. I don't have the exact date, but the current traffic is around 12,000 vehicles a day, 15% heavy commercial. So that's 15% semi-traffic. That's almost double the state average, 18,500 per day on that segment. Just to put that in perspective, if you look at the whole trunk highway system in the whole state, is about 11,000 miles of trunk highway. That's centerline miles. Out of those, 4,800 of those miles have less traffic, total traffic, than we do trucks alone on this segment. So that puts it in perspective on that there's about 44% of the entire mileage of trunk highways in the state have less traffic, total traffic, than just the trucks on this segment. So obviously it's a unique highway in that it's farm to market, and we should talk about the safety improvements as well as capacity. So what have we done today? MnDOT's been a great help. I can't talk enough about them. They're a great partner to us. But things have stalled. We reached a point where the county's taken over the lead on engineering the project and moving forward, along with obviously the Southwest Corridor Transportation Coalition's help in securing federal funding. We have preliminary engineering complete on this five-mile section. We have an environmental assessment done, which is no easy task because I don't know if you realize, but the rules have changed recently where the Federal Highway Administration will not approve an EA or an EIS unless there's construction money already programmed for that project. So we were grandfathered in because we were towards the end of that. So that has been done and approved by them. Obviously, there's a shelf life to that that we talked about before in a previous project. And we also have an official map, which is relatively unique. We defined the right-of-way corridor. Because it's through the townships, usually the cities will do the official mapping if it's in a city. The county board adopted by ordinance an official map for the corridor. So we've defined the corridor, so we're ready to move forward. We've got about $1.3 million still in our funding pool to complete more engineering plans, do kind of a phasing concept on the project. But we're looking for more. We're looking for right-of-way acquisition funding and construction dollars. We realize it's a huge project, just like 14 is. I would say we're relatively similar to that. Obviously, that's a longer segment to undertake. But we're looking at trying to phase ours in pieces. And the first phase we're trying to accomplish is the first 2 miles coming out of Carver-Chaska to County Road 43. And that's about a two-mile segment, and we're estimating about $20 million needed to get that going. So that's our request today in summary, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Robgen. Members, anything, any questions? All right. Mr. Lindell, anything further?
No, thank you very much for your consideration.
All right. Thank you, and appreciate it. Look forward to seeing the bill. Moving on, members.
Lyndon Robgen.
I'm sticking around for the next one also.
All right, yeah, I see we have a kind of a joint Scott-Carver presentation. So welcome to the committee. Welcome, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, and I have brought our local highway experts with me, and as you may or may not know, I see some new faces out here. I'm Claire Roebling, the former senator, but currently working as the communications and legislative coordinator for Scott County. And so that's why I'm here today. We don't have a specific project, but we do want to thank you for efforts that have been done in the past. I think you have a flyer or a handout that shows some of our flooding issues that we've been dealing with in recent years. And we are on our way to finding another flood-proof route across the river. And we're very thankful for the state effort, local effort, and especially MnDOT's cooperation with us on this has been wonderful. And but we have a bridge coming over the river, and we can't just leave it hanging in the air. And so, of course, we have to talk somewhat about how we're going to coordinate that and tie it in with the other existing roads. And so we'll have a little discussion about that. But mainly we want to just talk about local road funds. We have funds that I know you'll be requesting in the bonding bill for local roads. Very important. Across the state, we've heard all afternoon about the importance of that. We have also the money that comes in the Rolf Fund, which is important to preserve right-of-way for future projects. And then, of course, we have the other local roads, bonding, and Rolf.
Local bridge.
Oh, the local bridge fund, too. So, we're asking to pass a specific bill for us, but we know that the more money that gets into all of these funds, the more opportunities all of the local units of government will have. So, with that, I'll turn it over to our local highway specialists.
All right. Ms. Vermillion, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and senators. And really, as Claire stated, we're really here to talk about support for the local road bonding program. I think we've provided you a couple examples of regionally significant corridors that the local government agencies, especially counties in the metro area, have to provide. County Highway 42, which is a major connection from Hastings all the way over to Chaska through Scott and Dakota County, is just one example of a principal arterial that both counties have to upgrade and provide and maintain. County Highway 17 is the other one that I've provided you an example of. That is a major north-south route that connects New Prague and districts 6 and 7 on our south into the metro area and the 101 bridge and 169. These projects alone have, over the course of about a 10-year period, over $55-some million in funding. Our state aid allotment is about $6 million a year. So when you take a look at that, you're looking at almost over 85% of our state aid having to go just fund two regionally significant routes within the area, besides the other 500 and some lane miles that we have to take care of and maintain. And when you talk about County Highway 17, I think the significance there, you heard about safety and crashes today, but there were over 120 crashes in a four-year period on that highway, which included three fatalities, eight very serious injury-related crashes, and 27 more potential injury crashes. And so when you talk about that, the county went ahead and with their own local dollars and in partnership actually with the SMSC, who has been a wonderful partner in MnDOT on this project from a design standpoint, completed a partial interchange. Since that was completed in 2011, we haven't had so much as a sideswipe there, and we were seeing several serious crashes a year. And that's the example of where quite a bit of our property tax is going, is to projects and programs like that that are supporting the regional roadways. It was interesting. Scott County was one of the leaders in doing the first local safety plan for our highway system, which MnDOT has now implemented throughout the state, and I think it's been a wonderful thing. Ours was completed over 4 years ago. And we had a joint session with Carver County last year, and MnDOT brought in a speaker that I think really struck home with me more than I have been in the last 28 years of working on highways and safety. And I had no clue who this lady was. You could tell she was nervous even to get up and speak. She had no clue who we were, but she was talking about her husband and a day in her life and how she went to work one day, and when she came home, there were two sheriff deputies sitting in her yard, and her husband had been killed in a T-bone crash on Highway 212. She didn't even know what a T-bone crash was, but she talked about safety and the importance and how this had jarred her life and her children's life. He had just been released from the military after serving a fairly lengthy career with them, and the impact this had on her at 212. And what struck me, though, was after that, she looked at me and the chief deputy from Scott County who was sitting there, because safety is engineering and it's enforcement and it's education, all those things that we as public servants try to do. And she looked at me and she said, "I'm a Scott County resident," which I had no clue when she started her talk with us. We didn't know where she lived. And she looked at me and she said, "There will be no more T-bones at 42 and 17, and thank you, County Board, for doing that." And it's not very often you hear thank you in the government sector, but you could tell that she really was appreciative of that and what it would do to every day for her commute as a Shakopee resident. And so the importance of the safety, the mobility, and what it means for the economic development. The other one that is a regionally significant road here in Scott and Carver County is the 101 Bridge, and it also could use some funding from the local road bonding fund. It has been subjected to flooding three times since 2010 on an average of 29 days. I think the longest was about a 43-day stretch. The estimated cost in $09 to those closures is over $670,000 a day, and what it costs the public for that bridge to be down. It carries over 20,000 vehicles a day, which is right in line with other regionally significant bridges that we have and that we're funding in the region. The bridge alone is about $34 million, and again, it's a combination of the state flood. MnDOT has been wonderful to work on this project, some local road dollars from last year. There's still a $5 million local contribution from the county and the city. And it really is, and also what's really lacking here is an opportunity for Carver County to complete a connection on Old Highway 212 that is needed and on 101. Scott County, when it took back the Highway 169 bypass project, took back a lot of miles of 101 and Highway 169. It was over 15 years, which actually went longer than what a turnback is supposed to, before there was funding to even replace the pavement. And so the cost to the locals, I don't think we ever got so many insurance claims from potholes as we did on Old 101 in the downtown area until it could be overlaid and the pavement enhancement done to it from the turnback funds. But one of the issues we're facing is the turnback pot is underfunded and the need to get that up to speed in the metro so that we can get some of these projects done. And so I'd really like to encourage you to consider that local road account. These projects play important roles in supporting the regional system and moving people from a safety standpoint. With that, I'm going to turn 101 over to Lyndon.
Mr. Chair.
Right. Welcome back to the committee.
Members of the committee, after all the requests today, and obviously it's a tough story to hear all these regionally significant projects around the state that are very important to the locals, and the common theme is they're all trunk highways or interstates, and none of them are in the 20-year plan. I'd like to give you a brief update of where we are with the 101 bridge, because this is a success story. This shows how things are working. If you remember, I think it was a couple of sessions ago, I testified, I think it was a House hearing, about the flood mitigation bonding. And this is a success story of how a good project has been selected and how we're going to deliver it. The only segue is, as Leslie mentioned, is a little bit of information about the county turnback account, which is funds out of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. About 5%, 53% of the 5% off the top goes to the Flex Highway account, which are used for projects that rebuild old trunk highways that are now under local jurisdiction. And Leslie mentioned that a little bit. We're kind of in trouble on that in the metro area in specific. There's a huge backlog of projects ready to go, but there's simply not enough money. So I'll touch on that at the end. But if I might just give you an update of where we're at. This first picture obviously tells its own story. This is the 101 river crossing between Shakopee and Chanhassen. This was in spring of 2011. The road was closed 43 days. There's 20,000 vehicles a day that cross that roadway. And there's a couple other pictures in here, one on 41 and County Road 11 and County Road 9 in between Scott and Carver counties. Total of about 40,000 vehicles a day were impacted by these floods. So hence the appreciation that we have for the state, for MnDOT, on doing a study on the Minnesota River Valley in the metro area to come up with lower cost, high benefit solutions to try to alleviate these flooding problems. They did that in 2011. I thought it was a great study, and the counties and the cities really appreciate it. They focused in eventually on the two bridges, one on 41 and one on 101, and came up with some great projects. Benefit to cost ratio that it's shown on the slide is over 3. Anything over 1 is a go. It's a very beneficial project. We had consensus that we should submit 101 to the bonding, the flood bonding program, which was a competitive statewide process, and we're lucky enough to receive $20 million. So thanks to you. And thanks to the state for selecting that project. Then we met with the governor at Scott County and a bunch of other folks. Claire Roebling organized it when she was senator, and we had a very good discussion. And we said we've got to build a four-lane structure here. We don't want to build a two-laner. It's 20,000 cars a day right now. It's projected to be 30. Let's do it right. So we were lucky enough, the legislature passed the local road improvement program for $10 million. And that, again, was competitive statewide, and our project was selected for 9. So I can't tell you how appreciative we are with this. So now we're moving. MnDOT's designing the bridge as we speak. We're designing the intersection where it joins in at County Road 61, which is old 212, a turnback project. So with that, we did a value engineering study where we all got in a room and figured out the best approach to get these projects built together. And recently we decided to build them as one, rather than one agency doing one and the state building the bridge. But to do that, the county has to be the lead. So we've stepped up. We're the lead agency now. And this kind of gives you a snapshot of the project layout. It's a 4,100-foot bridge, Shakopee's to the right and Chanhassen's to the left. So a four-lane structure, approximately 78, 79 feet wide, and it's designed to protect the users from a 100-year flood event. That's a 1% chance of reaching that in any given year. That's the flood event that it will protect. So a significant benefit to the users. And as I mentioned, the county is designing a project to upgrade old 212 at the same time. And the reasons for that is obviously economies of scale. It's a turnback route, so we have 15 years to get the project done. And this is not the end. We need to reconstruct 101 up the bluff because there's some significant issues up there. So these projects are now combined. You'll see that there's two roundabouts on each end of 61. Proven the safest intersection out there is a roundabout. So that's what we're proposing. A snapshot of the funding. Obviously, it's an expensive project, but I think for what we're getting an incredible benefit here. About $60 million total. That's engineering right-of-way and construction. The bridge itself is about $40 million, $34 million for construction, and then there's a significant amount of engineering work, of course. We've got $20 million in flood bond money. That's trunk highway bonding. The local road improvement account, $9 million. And then there's the partnerships with Scott County, the city of Chanhassen. Carver County is putting $7.5 million into the project. And this is where we have the gap. The turnback account, it's eligible to use the turnback account. Unfortunately, as you'll see with this slide, that money is not available in 2022. The program it's over-programmed. There's projects that are ready to go, but there's simply not enough money. So our plug today is let's try to boost the turnback account. There's projects ready to move if we just had money. Good example of that is our county board just refinanced the bond on a highway when we built the freeway, Highway 212. We bonded for a bunch of the county roads that go over the freeway. We refinanced that debt at 0.8% now, which is incredible now. Construction inflation is about 5%. So if you have a project ready to go, it's a great time to bond. So that's kind of a message that we're telling folks is it's a good time to do projects. The money out there is pretty cheap right now. The other plug is, of course, increasing funding to the local road improvement program. We see that as a statewide benefit to all local roads. We had $10 million last session. We would like to see that much, much higher. There's a big list of projects out there statewide that can benefit from this fund. And I know the counties and the cities and the townships are ready to roll on these projects. We just need a little more funding in there. So, finally, a snapshot. I won't spend too much time on this. It's in your packet. This just paints a picture just in and around the 101 bridge area. These are all turnback projects. So these are all MnDOT trunk highways that are either now county roads or they will be. And it shows you that we're at about a $70 million shortfall. We have to wait way out for these projects to happen. So it highlights where the problem is, Mr. Chair. So with that, I think I'm done. Thank you. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much, Mr. Robling. Anything further, Senator Robling?
No, thank you.
Right,
we wanted to give you a case of where some of the needs are, and we know they're statewide, and appreciate your listening to us.
Great, thank you. Anything further, members? Nope. Very good. So we will next meet on Monday, and we have several bills. We're going to hear at least four bills, and then on Wednesday, even more bills. So. Very good. We're going to hear on the Capital Security Report on Monday and then the corresponding proposal from Senator Benson. So that'll be interesting. With that, no more business before the committee. We are adjourned. Thank you.